This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, this is Live and Learn. I'm Lee Tree Lin. The DTOLJ Education Fund is an initiative launched by the family of the late Datuk Sri Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau. Margaret Nawan, who is the great-granddaughter of Datuk Sri, is here in the studio to explain why this initiative is needed, as well as the uniqueness of Kenya and Kayan culture. Margaret, before we go into the Education Fund, let's start with its namesake. Who is Datuk Sri Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau, and what legacy did he leave behind?
First of all, I would like to wish Salam Satu Malaysia and Happy Ramadan to all our Muslim listeners. Datuk Sri Senator Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau is our grandfather, mentor and inspiration. To our people, he was a leader with caliber and charisma. He was simply irreplaceable. For those who had chance to meet him, they have written testimonies on Facebook on what a noble man and leader he was, always putting people's interests first, above everything else. Allow me to read excerpts of foreword by Tun Pahin Sri Haji Abdul Taib Mahmud, the current Yang Dipertua Negeri of the State of Sarawak, in his biology. He said, even though he did not attend school, he realized that his people had to seek education first to enable them to move ahead. He started one of the first schools in Long San. Thanks to him, Baram has produced a large number of highly educated members of the Orang Ulu communities, professionals, lawyers, doctors, and many others who hold degrees and doctorate. Datuk Sri Senator Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau built one of the first schools in Baram. He had a school named after him, Sekolah Menengah Kerajaan Datuk Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau, and in Miri, a long stretch of road which connects the town to the airport was also named after him.
And how did he influence your life, Margaret, growing up?
Okay. Personally, I remembered him as a very loving and caring person. The little time that I personally had with him, because most of the time I was in boarding school, in a convent in fact, since I was 6 years old, I used to sit on his lap, and he would comb my hair and part it in the middle and said to me, always keep your hair tidy and tie it up, because a tidy and neat person looks much presentable. And during his tea time, I would purposely pass by his room many times and peep in just to get his attention. And he would invite me to sit with him, actually. That is actually what I was after, because actually I really loved the biscuits that he had at that time. And when people come to meet him, they normally would sit about 3 to 4 distance away, and they would sit on the floor. And at that time, I was sitting on his lap, and I didn't understand why do they act that way. Apparently, it was a show of respect to him. Even my own late father acted the same way. So these are the things which I remembered very well about this, our grandfather.
The fund that's named after him is in service of the Kayan and Kenya community. Could you tell us a little bit about those communities' culture? How similar or different are they?
Okay. The Kayan and the Kenya are the most populous of the Orang Ulu groups who live for centuries in the Upper Rejang and in the northern interior along the Baram River, or we call it locally the Telangusan. Both groups migrated from East Kalimantan into Sarawak roughly about 600 years ago. The Kayan occupies mainly the lower part of the Baram, and the Kenya occupies the Upper Baram. Whilst those in the Rejang area, the Kayan and Kenya, live together in a resettlement area called Asap. The Kayan and the Kenya have a fair amount in common, in particular our music and our artworks and dances, and of course custom practices such as engagement, marriages, children naming ceremonies. Though our languages are different, the same family as the other Bornean tongues has a sing-song quality to the language, and they have a well-defined social hierarchy like the Ibans. Traditionally, the social order was topped by the Maran, or the higher class of the longhouse, and followed by a group of 3 to 4 lesser aristocrats, and lastly the Panyan, or the lay families, or the slave. But nowadays, it's no longer exists. So, but anyhow, all groups take pride in their longhouses, which can be massive.
And is access for these communities to education still something that's very difficult to come by?
Yes, it is actually. As you know, that the Kayan and the Kenyan are mostly living in longhouses, far from the outreach of the town areas. Thus, most of our children have to stay in boarding schools, and they go to school to the nearest, which to their longhouse. So some parents actually, who can't afford transportation, because at the moment we are, the children goes to school via boats or four-wheel drives, because we don't have proper roads at the moment, they would stop sending their schools because of the increase in the fees or the fares of the transportation. But this has improved by leaps and bounds, but there are still a lot of area that needs improvement.
So how can we overcome this? Because, you know, this issue of distance, this issue of roads not being very accessible, they are systemic problems.
There are several ways, actually. The first is perhaps to encourage most of the children to stay in hostels. Most students live far from schools that are mostly situated in small towns along the Baram River. As you can see in our promotional video, all the kids go to school using boats, either boats or using four-wheel drives. So hopefully when they stay in the hostel, they are incentivized to attend schools. And the parents and the teachers association of this school should also put this agenda in highest priority on how to incentivize their attendance. They have to be more efficient, timetable for home leave during weekends or holidays, so that they can be with their family over weekend instead of in the hostel. And their transportation must be sorted out. Thirdly, we plan to propose as well to the education district officer to have counselors at schools and have home visits to create awareness of the importance of education. We have to propose to the owners of the WE project, which is currently concentrated on the club community in Barrio, to extend that program to the Baram. Fifthly, the volunteers from WE project, hopefully, and other volunteers are encouraged to stay in our kampongs to help students to maximize assets that are readily available, such as computer labs, internets, and libraries. There will be sharing sessions from current undergraduates and graduates to share the campus life and exposure to the various areas of studies.
Is there still a lack of awareness of the importance of education in the community? Is that something that, you know, people don't really see the importance of still?
Our community are aware that education is very important. But sometimes, you know, it's the to get to the proper education place and to get to the a good education place is difficult for them. Yeah, because living, because of geographical reasons, they stay interior, you know, up in the interior, and they stay in longhouses, accessible only by rivers and by very poor roads. So it's quite difficult for them. And sometimes most of the children will just give up and stay home. They'd rather work than leave their parents at home and on their own.
Especially to go through such difficult journeys just
yes,
to go to school.
That's right, yeah.
You are the founder of the DTOLJ Education Fund. What is it?
The DTOLJ Education Fund aims to give assistance to children from the Kayan and the Kenyah community of more than 60,000 attending schools or tertiary education, as well as to children with special needs. So it's not only for the normal children, but it's also for special student children.
I assume that this fund was set up because of all the reasons that you cited earlier of, you know, how hard it is to get children to the education that they require. You've set the target at 130,000 ringgit. Why is that the target? It's a very specific number.
All right. This is just an initial target, and we believe it's achievable. between 6 to 12 months. The campaign with Pitch In will last for about 3 months up until September 1st this year. We plan to launch with a minimum payout of $100,000. No more than $30,000 will be used to defray setting up of foundation, logistics, and professional fees of performance, resourcing of materials for crafts, and hourly rate wages for our Kampong ladies who will be doing the crafts. We hope to do the launching of the Education Fund in December 2015, this year, in conjunction with our family Kampong Jubilee celebration. The Jubilee has its own separate fundraising activities. So after partnership with Pitch In officially, which expires on the 1st of September, we will be setting up booths, hopefully, to sell crafts and small income generators such as photo booths where visitors can rent costumes and take pictures to print on postcard calendars for a small minimal fee. We also plan to join the green market at the Eco Film Festival at Publica in October. At the moment, we are firming up our proposals. Nonetheless, fundraising initiatives for the DTOLJ Education Fund will continue to grow the fund as a sustainable rate to support the cost. So far, we have a few programs and events and are discussing with potential partners to firm up the event.
I'm speaking today with Margaret Nawan, founder of the Datuk Sri Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau Education Fund, which is a fund set up for the Kayan and Kenya community to assist children to get to the education that they require. Up next, we find out more about the collaboration with Pitch In. You are listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. This is Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. In the studio with me today is Margaret Nawan, founder of the Datuk Sri Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau Education Fund, which is an education fund that aims to serve the Kayan and Kenya community. You've chosen to go the crowdfunding route with Pitch In. Why?
At this stage, we feel that the crowdfunding is a great way for us to broaden our network online, reach out to new supporters, and raise awareness. It is about more than just the money. A crowdfunding campaign doesn't cost much. For charitable purpose like our DTOLJ initiative, Pitch In a fraction of amount, 3.5%. Furthermore, we already have ready rewards for pledges. It is a great way to showcase our crafts and performance of culture, which otherwise would be difficult to show physically.
So what rewards are you offering then for pledges?
We listed rewards from as affordable as RM 10 ringgit, including postage for the lanyards up to about 50,000 ringgit for a two-hour cultural performance in conjunction of Malaysia Day. We have listed other practical items as well, such as iPad holders, office stationery, and gifts items such as sling bags, pouches, evening bags, and so on.
You mentioned that you are currently in the process of looking for partners and collaborators. Are you also working with corporations in the private sector?
Yes, we are. And we have actually written proposals, and we are awaiting for response from them.
Malaysia Day is obviously a very important day for our country, but particularly for our contemporaries from across the South China Sea. What have you got planned for this Malaysia Day?
So far, our plan is to open a booth and showcase a small cultural performance. We have yet to firm the sponsorship for the cultural performance. Thus, the venue and the date will depend on the sponsor's request. Like I said earlier, our booth will showcase our crafts and station a small photo booth where visitors can rent costumes and take photos. This is one small education about the culture of our community apart from raising funds for this initiative. Maybe BFM can invite our Sapek players to play at your studio.
We'll
and,
see.
And we can educate the listeners on the origins and the meanings of each songs from the Sapek.
That is a very interesting point that you made about education and awareness, because on the subject of Malaysia Day, do you think that there is a lack of understanding of indigenous culture, especially among those from the peninsula where I suppose you're less represented?
Yes, I agree, more or less. But this has improved over the years, though. through education and through various ways. Apart from performance, crafts, there are interracial marriages, employment with multinationals, our kids attending colleges use all words of mouth, form of educating the peninsula friends and all over Malaysia as well, and families on our culture. We at DTOLJ will have perseverance of our culture as our second pillar after education, and we have plans in pipeline to propel these efforts to achieve greater results. Did I mention that Datuk Seri was also one of the delegates from Sarawak forming Malaysia? Yes, he was one of the founding fathers of Malaysia. Interestingly, if you see in our promotion video of this initiative, that this formation of Malaysia book, in the illustrations, you can see Datuk Seri himself dressing in a suit, but with his traditional headgear, the necklace and his earrings. There are a few taken in a group photo along with other founding fathers, including Lee Kuan Yew, Datuk Stevens, and Yeo Ching Ho. There's more intimate picture even with Tun Ong Yeok Lin. He attended the Lord Cobble Commission meetings with his attire. Now, this is a man truly proud of his culture. In fact, in any official meetings, he stands out among the crowd with his traditional attire, his headgear and his earrings and his necklace. So we are here to carry on his legacy. And I'm here today with a necklace. That's a little sample here.
It's a lovely necklace.
Yeah, thank you. To showcase our culture. And I use this every day to work, and people will be asking me where I get it from and how much does it cost. So it's a good way to promote culture as well.
And they can pledge, right, if they want to get a necklace.
Yes,
so there
yes.
is that.
Yes, they do.
How do you balance between the need to preserve heritage alongside the need to modernize to improve overall standards of living?
Okay, when we are discussing the list of rewards, we are very strict in making sure that the crafts are sustainable, for instance. We are already drafting business plans for sustainability project, which involves the education to our craftsmen to use bamboo and only recycle rattans to make products. We discourage the harvesting of wood, tree barks that are not sustainable and polluting as they use harsh chemicals. We have in the pipeline to make sape, the traditional instrument, using recycled wood or other more sustainable forest materials. So not only we modernize our crafts, we promote the sustainability of the crafts and still preserve our culture. May I just add, in one proposal to a public listed company, we have proposed to come up with tax to the items to educate on the sustainability of the craft as well as to educate on the designs. For example, the meaning of the Tree of Life spiraling design. We also be creating awareness on the sustainability of our culture and the forest by programs mentioned earlier. We are also pleased to inform that we will be launching a sport event, likely a water sports event, next year. This will create awareness of our nature and harvesting the strength of our streams while having fun. Our partner is the project owner of Runners Wild Barrio.
Our government measures the country's well-being using metrics like GDP, poverty index, and median income. What do economic measurements like these actually mean to indigenous communities like the Kayan and the Kenya? Do you see it in real terms in your community? Do you see it actually taking place?
I have to be honest here because this is a difficult question to answer. But Statistics Department have showed that in 2010, the Orang Ulu consisting of the Kayan and Kenya makes only about 5% of the total population of Sarawak, which is more or less about 3.4 million. And our gross state product per capita that time was 33,000. I can tell you that it's not our community income per capita. In my kampung, some families hardly earn 500 a month. There are possible recipients of BRIM, but DTOLJ vision is to set up a fund that is sustainable, that gives not only our children better education for better future, but create jobs and preserving culture in so many ways, like in crafts, cultural performance, etc.
Will this affect the way the fund will be managed if you turn it into a foundation?
The priority of the charter will not change. Number one is education, followed by culture. We are finalizing the charters and the business plan. Well, we will, of course, be informing our stakeholders and donors annually with annual reports and advertorials. The foundation, like any others, are strictly regulated by authorities who will make sure it is well managed, accounts audited, etc., just like in any other companies. Yeah.
And finally, for people who want to contribute to this fund overall, who would like to help, where can they go? How can they do that?
Okay, you can log on into http://pitchin.myproject229/1004 and make pledges via cash to Pitch In team. They have their bank account set up there via credit card, debit card, or check, or via PayPal account. Rewards are as affordable as RM, as low as 8 ringgit actually, for a name card holder to about 50,000 for cultural performance. The orders can be customized based on functionality and the colors requirements. Pledges can be made to pitchin.my. Alternatively, you can contact DTOLJ team for contribution or even partnership. We are seeking for partners like airlines that can give one free airfare for prospective children to fly them from Sarawak to their campus, for example, or maybe private college that already has foundation that are willing to tie up to our grant, our sponsored student, a course of their choice at their institution.
And all this will be happening up until September 1st.
Yes, yes. And we plan to do a soft launching during the Malaysia Day on the 16th of September, hopefully, more or less around that date. And to do the grand launching in December this year at our village.
Wonderful. Thank you very much for joining me today, Margaret. I've been speaking with Margaret Nawan, founder of the Datuk Sri Temenggong Oyong Lawai Jau Education Fund, which is a fund that aims to help assist the children of the Kayan and Kenya community with getting the education that they deserve. You have been listening to Live and Learn on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.